People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon. Welcome you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm pleased to introduce you to my guest today. Delia Sainsbury is the founder and artistic director of the Waterfront Theatre School and one of South Africa's most distinguished performers and educators. She's had a long and incredibly exciting life, Delia. You have made her West End debut in Camelot years and years ago, and also then came out to South Africa, having been in television when she was just 18 in the UK, BBC and ITV, as an actress, dancer and presenter. She became a pioneering creative force at the SABC after relocating to South Africa and enjoyed a 30-year broadcasting career, choreographed, performed and presented on numerous long-running national programs. I think that's where most people will know you from. Delia, welcome. Delia Sainsbury.
Thank you. Gosh, that sounds really impressive when you say it like that.
It does, doesn't it? And I was just reading bits of it,
yeah.
All the other bits. But I want to find out more about your backstory. But I'm most interested in the show that's just opened called Something Rotten. Tell me about this, because I have to confess ignorance here.
Well, it was a Broadway show, and it was an extraordinary thing, really, that they did a Broadway show based on sort of English Shakespeare. It's completely mad. It was actually written by two brothers, and it's a complete spoof. It's very Monty Python.
Really,
they did a concert version of it in London at Drury Lane, actually, and it's actually currently running at a theatre in Manchester, and it's doing so well to packed houses that they are hopefully going to move it into the West End. But it's absolutely batty. It's about two brothers who are desperately trying to write a play, and they can't compete with Shakespeare, who's a rock star. He's a rock star of the 16th century, and they are totally fed up with the fact that they're always in Shakespeare's shadow.
Is Shakespeare part of the cast?
Yes, he is.
So it's set in that sort of
time? It is.
Time.
Yes, it's set in the Elizabethan period, yes.
Okay.
And
that title, sorry, Delia, the title, Something Rotten, is that the Hamlet quote?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
And so they decide that, actually Nostradamus, who is also in the cast, predicts that the only way that they're going to be a success is if they write the musical. And of course, I mean, you know, a musical in this 16th century. And it really is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. It's a spoof on Shakespeare, and it's a spoof on the musical. I think there's a lot of things that go over some people's heads, but of course everybody who is any part of our industry in any way will get all the in jokes and all the subtleties of it. Very funny.
How did you get it, or how did it come about coming to South Africa?
Well, our students did a kind of potted version of it as a project. And because they have to produce one act or a scene of a musical as part of their training. Mm-hmm. And a group of them decided to do a little kind of potted version of Something Rotten. And it was so funny that we said, look, we've never done anything like this before. We always try to do things that challenge the students that have not been done in South Africa. And so there's a first. So they can really get their teeth into something which is experimental and unusual. So we applied for the rights, didn't know if we were going to get it, and we did. And we were very, very fortunate to be granted the rights to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so off we go.
Off you go, gosh.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the car. Is it a big cast? Who wrote it? That's first of all.
Oh, goodness me. It's Wayne Kirkpatrick is his name. And I can't remember his co-author, who's his brother. But it was written by a couple of Americans who have written some very sort of off-the-wall stuff.
Yeah.
And
I like your reference to Monty Python.
Yeah, it is. It's very Monty Python.
Yeah.
And it's become a huge, it's almost like a sort of a cult musical. It's almost like the way that the people reacted to when we did Heathers.
Because
people didn't know anything about Heathers, and they didn't know anything about You're in Town. They didn't. Paul Griffiths, who's our director, always tries to find very new and innovative stuff for them mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. So what we do is a bit risky because, you know, as a school, we can't afford to lose money.
And it's fun anyway. I'm sure the students enjoy something risky.
Well, they do. It's very different to anything that they've done before. They're having a ball, actually. They okay. really are.
Is it yeah. a big cast?
It's about 20.
Oh, so 20, it's a fair size.
Yeah, about 25, yeah.
So it's the whole singing, dancing, acting thing, the famous triple threat.
Exactly. Yes, it is. Yeah. And they also help to make the props, and they also design the set. You know, because it's a school, because we're a place of education, we don't bring people in from outside, because the whole thing has got to be the experience for the students. Mm-hmm. It's all about the kids, and it's all about their progression and their training. Okay. So we try to get them to cover as many aspects of the production as possible.
I want to talk to you more about the Waterfront School in a moment, but just on that subject, that means that the people acting and all that are also learning other skills within the theatre world.
Yeah, absolutely. Tina Svillion, who is our musical director, who's been out of school about 5-6 years now, he's also the musical director and director for Peter Pan, for Fred and Marcel. He's brilliant, and he's come in to be our musical director. We have people who design the sets, make the props. We have a costume department with 5 of our students running it. So we try to give them as much experience as possible so that we give them as many tools in the toolbox as we can.
Yes, because if they don't happen to succeed as an actor or actress, they can do other things in the theatre, as you
and
say.
Also a lot of them elect not to do that. You know, it's a 4-year training period, and they come in with one idea of what they want to do. But that isn't necessarily what they leave with, because we open so many doors for them. They often elect to go into other aspects of the industry. We've got one young lady who did her licentiate with us, went right the way through, did all her qualifications, and is now managing 5 venues on a cruise line.
Oh, goodness me.
She chose
Lucky
to.
Her. Yes,
yeah, I mean,
yes.
She's traveling the world as a stage manager on a cruise line, and that's what she elected to do when she left. She said, I've got all these skills. I know how to work with actors, know how to work with dancers. But I don't want to perform. This is what I want to do.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah. Now, listen, let's have your first piece of music. And I know Camelot is important because I said it was your first professional show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was indeed. I was 17.
Do you remember it clearly and vividly?
I do, because when I auditioned, it was a classical ballet audition. And I was still at school, and we were allowed to audition for our first show. And I was terribly nervous. I mean, here was I, this, you know, little girl from the suburbs, and went to dance on Drury Lane stage at the age of 17. And I couldn't believe that I got selected. It was right at the end of the Drury Lane run, and then it went on tour. But I got to dance for my first show at Drury Lane Theatre.
Oh, what a wonderful memory. Yeah. So let's listen to Camelot.
Twice as much. strain for us, twice the despair, twice the pain for us, as we had known before.
That's a song from the musical Camelot, I Loved Him Once in Silence. What a lovely title. It was the first choice of my guest, Delia Sainsbury. We're talking about the Waterfront Theatre School's musical called Something Rotten that has just opened. Where is it on, by the way?
It's on here.
At Artscape?
Yes, at the
Arena.
In the Arena.
Oh, okay.
We love the Arena.
It's the wonderful intimacy there, isn't it?
Mm. Well, you know, they've said to us before, look, we'd really like you to consider transferring to the main stage. We've actually elected not to at this point.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because we feel it is a college production, and you know, we're not a management. We're a school.
Yes.
So
yes, yes.
We want to be able to do it justice. And if we can't afford to spend R2 million on a set, which we can't,
right.
We thought it was better to stay where we are. And we love the Arena, and it serves us very well.
What I quite like about the Arena as an audience member is it's sort of a mysterious trip to get to your seat. You go in the sort of side door, and you don't think you're anywhere, and you go up a back stairway sort of thing. It gets dark, and then suddenly you're in the space.
Mm.
And sometimes the space can look a bit eerie, which I think is a good thing. But so have you got sets? Are you using sets on this?
Oh, yes, 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 of course. And we always have a good set.
Okay.
And but we tailor make it to that space.
Right. Mm. And do the students enjoy it? Because it at least you don't have to bellow, because it's quite intimate, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, we obviously do have to use a good mic system.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the most expensive part of our production.
Really?
Always
really?
Is.
Yeah.
But yes, you're quite right. And it does enable you to get that subtlety as well of performance when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just talking about the Waterfront School at the moment, how many shows do you do a year? Do you do one big show or do various shows?
We do one big show a year, which is the one that we always bring here to Artscape. But there are, I think, 6 performance opportunities for the students. In term one, we do a one-act play festival, which is adjudicated by industry professionals. We then have a major choreographic competition for the dance section, where the students are not allowed to dance in their own piece. They can choreograph it, but they have to select their dancers.
Oh, that's
costumes.
An interesting angle.
Yeah.
Goodness.
They have to be able to be on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
We've produced some extremely good, strong, young choreographers, and that again is adjudicated by industry professionals. Then we have the major musical, which is Now. Then we do a dance show, which we have changed our format. Instead of doing quite a lot of short pieces, we're now doing a program, trying to get the dancers used to what it's like to dance in a 12 to 15 minute piece. So we have 4 12 to 15 minute pieces, which we produce every year. That is purely dance, pure technique, no one backing them up with vocals or doing anything else. It's purely to stretch them mm-hmm. as dancers for those who do wish to join a professional dance company yeah. to push them up to that level. And then the final one is called devised projects. That is anything the students want to do. And now a lot of them are doing it on film because we're also teaching film and television techniques. And so a lot of them are now electing to make their own short films. And they're producing some really, really good stuff.
So you're really across the board then, yeah. aren't you? You're not just teaching dance or choreography.
Oh, gosh, no.
And you're also not just teaching serious theatre.
It's
right across the board.
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you actually break it down, I think somebody was doing a ratio the other day. Musical theatre is 4% of our industry.
4%?
I think so, yes. Look, somebody can take me up on that, a listener. Mm-hmm. But as far as I was told, it is, you know, we think it's this major, major thing.
Yeah.
But it's a small part of our industry yeah. when you consider all the other aspects of the creative economy that there are.
Mm-hmm. I suppose one thinks of the musical as being bigger because, generally speaking, a musical is such a big production.
Quite.
So many people are involved and
exactly.
bands and orchestras and all the rest of it and
yeah,
costumes.
Exactly.
So you tend to think that it's the biggest, but that's a surprise, actually.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's certainly the most spectacular.
Yes,
and it's certainly
yes.
the most glamorous, probably, part,
yeah.
you know, unless you're doing a movie, I mean, which is also, I think, marvelously exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, if you take all aspects like dance companies, classical ballet, contemporary, if you take the cruise lines, where
yes,
so
yes.
many of our students are now working on the cruise lines, they earn a lot of money. They're stuck in the middle of the ocean. They can't spend it.
Exactly.
So that they, you know, they're having a ball traveling.
And they earn
the world.
Foreign currency.
They do. And of course, remember, the cruise lines are also doing musicals.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, there's all of that aspect. And then we have also a great entrepreneurial program where our motto is perform, teach, create. So we say if you can do all of those three things, you'll never be out of work. That's the bottom line. We've got to keep you working. So on the creative side, we encourage them to be entrepreneurs, which is why they do devise projects. They have to budget it for themselves. They have to learn what it's like to have a budget.
Oh, even budgets. They even have to work with budgets.
Where they're taught to work with a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when you're on your own, you don't have a budget. So you've got you have to be able to make something out of nothing
mm-hmm.
until you become established.
And you teach them all that. How big is the teaching crew there?
We have 17 permanent teachers.
17.
Yeah. And they're not drop-in, drop-out teachers. They are permanent staff.
And they cover all these aspects that you feature, offer.
So that's on the dance, drama, and the musical theatre side. Yeah.
Okay, my goodness. Mm. I want to find out more about the background of the Waterfront in a moment, but we've got people from Funny Girl, a famous song, if ever there was one.
Yeah.
Apparently your second show, Delia.
It was. They actually released me from Camelot, can you believe, to go into Funny Girl. And I must just tell you, can I tell you a very funny story about
Please, the, please, please.
Okay, I think I was 18, right, so because I'd just come out of Camelot. And what's the first rule when you go to an audition? Never sing anything from the show, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. So what did I do? Okay, right. I know nothing. So I get down to the end of the dancers. I might tell you, there were 400 dancers that auditioned for Funny Girl.
Good grief.
All the way around the block at Leicester Square, like four times. Eventually, anyway, I get down to the end and I have to get a train to go to Liverpool because I'm now in Camelot. So I walk down the front of the stage, put my hands up like this to shield from the light, and I say to the Americans in the audience, excuse me, I have to leave now, so can I sing?
Oh, no. Cheeky.
And then I heard a gasp of horror behind me from everybody else that was auditioning. And they went, well, yeah, all right, what are you going to sing? So what did I sing? Don't Rain on My Parade, at the age of 18. Can you imagine?
The story
went round the West End like you can't believe. Anyway, so I belt out this song, and there's a dead silence at the end of it. And eventually I go, excuse me, I have to go, so do you want me or not? And they went, well, we do, actually, yes. I said, well, I'm sorry, I've got to leave to go to Liverpool, so can I come down and sign my contract? And they went, well,
You mean there and then?
There and then. I mean, I actually did this. And they said, well, no, you can't. We've got nothing prepared, but we'll send it to you. I went, oh, okay, fine. And I left. My dad was waiting at the stage door with a taxi to get me to Waterloo Station to get me onto the train. And I walked out and my dad said to me, well, did you get it? I said, yeah, I did. And he said, God, took you long enough, didn't it?
Oh, shame.
Can you imagine doing that? I mean, like,
I
even 2 years down the line, I realized what an absolute idiot I was. I mean,
but you got it.
I did.
That's the main thing. Well, congratulations for being so cheeky, as I said earlier.
Oh, no, outrageous. But, I mean, it didn't stand me in good stead. It really didn't because, I mean, I was very young, very stupid. And, I mean, word just go around the West End. And I was very teased for a very long time.
Well, let's forget about that. Or think about that, actually, while we listen to People from Funny Girl.
Travel single, oh, maybe we're lucky, but I don't know. With them just let one kid fall down and seven mothers faint. I guess we're both happy, but maybe we ain't. People who need people are the luckiest people in the world. We're children needing other children. Children, lovers are very special people. They're the luckiest people in the world. With one person, but first be a person who needs people.
but first be a person who needs people.
I say the inimitable Barbra Streisand, Delia, singing People from Funny Girl, which was the second show my guest was in as a rather cheeky young lady, as we've just heard. Delia Sainsbury is my guest, and basically we're talking about the Waterfront Theatre School's production of Something Rotten. I love the Monty Python thing there. That's made me very interested. But I just want to find out more about the Waterfront. It seems to have been there forever.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? We're in our 34th year.
No, you're joking.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought it was that long, but it does seem to have been there forever.
It was opened in April 92, officially.
Did you open it?
Yeah. I kept with Keith, my late husband, Keith Galloway. We were in Joburg for about 8 or 9 years before that. Mm-hmm. The backstory is we came over here to do West Side Story.
That's right.
And it was cast in England and Australia, and they had only a few South Africans in the cast. And my husband, Keith, was 20 years older than me. He'd been in the West End a long, long time. He'd directed, choreographed, and been in, I think, 19 West End musicals. And he'd directed Music Man and directed How to Succeed in Business. And he was brilliant. Anyway, he saw that it was a very strange thing. He saw this need for training in South Africa. And he said, I think we should explore this. And I didn't want to come here. I wanted to go back to England. I didn't want to stay here. And we did go back to England at the end of our contract, but we were only there for a couple of months. And he got this invitation to come back and start choreographing for SABC Television, which had just started, just started. And I remember walking over Waterloo Bridge with my mum, and I said, oh, Keith's had an offer to go back to South Africa. I don't want to go. She said, what do you mean you don't want to go? You're married. And I went, oh, all right then, okay. That's the end of the conversation. So we decided to come back for 6 months, let our flat in London for 6 months, and come back and see how things worked out. There was no job for me, nothing. So anyway, we came back here. And it's a bit of a rigmarole, which take up the rest of the program. But what actually happened was I ended up with my own TV program within 5 weeks of being here, because I was one of the few people that had had experience of live television.
Ah, right.
So I was on TV. Keith was choreographing for SABC. We applied for our permanent residence, which, again, was a bit of a rigmarole, but it happened. But it only happened because of our teaching qualifications. They said, we will grant you permanent residence as long as you open a school. And I said,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and I said to Keith, what are you doing? I don't want to open a school. And he said, but you want to stay here, don't you? I said, yes. He said, let's just teach a few people and keep the government happy. And I went, yeah, okay, fine. So we opened a school with one student.
In Johannesburg, teaching
her tap. Okay. And then within a couple of weeks, the professionals were saying, can we come and do class with you? Because you've got all this West End choreography, which was also Broadway choreography, mm-hmm. which we have no experience of. So we started teaching professionals. And then one day somebody came to me and said, would you take my child for a dance class? I said, no, I don't want to teach children. And then she said, well, I'm going to pay you X. And I went, okay, that's fine. So I started off with this one little girl, and then a few more came. And so the school developed in Johannesburg. And then we weren't certain about whether we wanted to stay. I mean, you've got to remember, it was very days of tremendous turmoil in South Africa.
Indeed.
And the children were then little. We'd had our children here. I think that Joe was six and Jenna was three or something. And we said, we don't know. It's in such political turmoil. We don't know if this is the right place for us. And I'd been offered a college in New Zealand to take over a college in New Zealand. And we came down here to the Baxter to do two shows. While we were down here, we had a phone call from David Jack, who was the MD of the Waterfront. And he said, I believe that you would like to relocate to Cape Town. And I thought it was a gag. I actually thought it was John Burks on 702. And I said, yeah, I'd love to relocate to Cape Town. And they said, well, would you like to come in for a meeting? So Keith and I had been to the beach. We came off the beach in our T-shirts and our slip-slops, went into the office at the Waterfront and found eight men sitting in extremely formal suits, sitting around this very long table. And we went, oh, this is for real. And they started showing us around premises. And they showed us where we are now, the old Mission to Seamen, which was completely derelict. And I just took one look at this building and I said, yes, please. Thank you, God. I mean, it had the space. It had this glorious mahogany staircase going up the center. It had the chapel, which we knew that we could convert to a small theater. It was a dream building. And that's how the Waterfront Theatre School happened. So we took a huge risk because the school was very well established then in Rosebank. And we just took a huge risk. We came down here and we started again.
From scratch, in fact.
From scratch.
First of all, having to fix the building.
They did it for us. The V&A were amazing. Now, I mean, I couldn't have done it myself. I mean, it must have cost them a small fortune because it was completely derelict and they had vagrants living in it and they'd stolen all the copper piping and they'd, oh no, it was a wreck. But they did it. And it took a year. And they did it for us. And we took a large, deep breath and came down here with two children, two dogs and Keith's mother-in-law and and opened the school in Cape Town.
And how soon did you start getting pupils?
We auditioned in advance, we actually started with quite a fair number. I think our reputation had gone before us. I think because we'd both been on television,
That's right, I was still on
TV because I was still doing Good Morning South Africa at that point. People knew who we were. I think a lot of people came from curiosity and went, they're TV personalities, but can they actually teach?
Right,
not knowing
right.
that we'd actually got international qualifications. And I think they came because it was kind of a prestige thing. But then when they realized that we actually did know what we were doing and we were very dedicated to what we were doing, the school grew very, very quickly.
Yeah. And then how did you get hold of the teachers? How did you...
Well, we started off with only four.
Right,
we brought two down from Joburg, and then we recruited our first vocal coach from down here. And then as the school grew, so the teaching faculty grew. But also what happened was we began to qualify teachers through our own process. And then we were able to bring in younger apprentice teachers from those that we'd qualified. So that also happened. And then people started to approach us and say, look, I've got this degree and I've done that and this is my experience and I'm looking for a job. And eventually, I mean, it was wonderful. We didn't have to really recruit. Some wonderful people approached us. And, you know, our staff have been with us, oh, well, I mean, 20 years. I mean, we don't have a turnover of staff.
Well, that's a very good sign, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and they are brilliant, all brilliant in their own right, absolutely brilliant. So it's like these pieces of a jigsaw, you know, you put them all together and it makes this marvelous kind of end product.
We're going to take another piece of music now, and you were talking about West Side Story just now, which in fact ended up bringing you to South Africa in the first place.
Yes.
So shall we do a little something from West Side Story?
Absolutely. Something's coming. I thought that was very kind of fortuitous for Keith and I. Something's coming.
And look what happened.
Yes.
Could be, who knows? There's something to any day. I will know right away, soon as it's yours. It may come cannonballing down to the sky, gleaming its eye, bright as a roar. Only just out of reach, down the block, on a beach, under a tree. I got a feeling there's a miracle due. Gonna control, coming to me. Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great. With a kick, with a shock, funnel, jingle, doddle, knock. Open the latch. Something's coming, don't know when, but it soon catch the moon. When had it got around the corner, whistling down the river. Come on, deliver to me. Will it be? Yes, it will. Maybe just by holding still, it'll be there. Come on, something, come on in. Don't be shy, meet a guy, pull up a chair. The air is humming, and something great is coming. Only just out of reach, down the block, on the beach, maybe tonight.
I just love that musical, West Side Story, Delia. Isn't it just the most amazing thing? Leonard Bernstein's glorious music, Stephen Sondheim, wrote the libretto, and it was another choice, the third choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Delia Sainsbury. We've been talking about the Waterfront School, and now I want to come right up to date now. Do you get lots of people every year?
You mean as a new intake?
New intakes, yes. Students coming
in. We get
in.
A tremendous number of applications. I think last year we had over 700.
Good heavens.
We have to sift very, very carefully.
Yeah.
We're a private school. We try to give as many bursaries as we can, but, I mean, it's not easy because we have extremely high overheads.
So when people
are paying a great deal of money for their training, we have to make sure that we're not accepting them under false pretenses.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's always that kind of dichotomy between running a business and being truthful about their future. We only fill the number of places of people who are leaving. So we maintain between 100 and, I would say, between 100 and 115 students.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
But it's spread over four years.
Oh, yes,
of course. It's spread over the four-year training.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got about 130 juniors in the junior school. So they start at the age of five, the babies.
Do they?
So, yeah, people forget we run a junior school as well.
Yes, I had no idea you did that. And your premises, you know, they're so easy to see as you come off the freeway there. And they look very sort of elegant in their way. You raved about the fact that you'd fallen into this wonderful opportunity. Is it an ideal situation acoustically for large rehearsals, for intimate rehearsals?
Yeah, it is. It's an absolute gift.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're in the Galloway Theatre and you're singing, everybody sounds amazing.
Because of the acoustics.
And we have a lovely big studio space with a full-size stage and sound and lighting, so we can actually put our own productions on there as well. We've got, I'm just trying to work it out. I think we've got something like 8 studios. We've got 5-6 costume stores.
So it's quite big, actually.
Yeah, it's a big premise. And, of course, we have a residence for 27 students.
Oh, an actual residence for the students. On the same premises.
On the premises, at the top of the building, yeah. We've got 2 buildings, the one that you see coming off the highway and the one that you see, which is behind the City Lodge. So they're both, we've got 2 buildings on the campus. And residence for 27 students, which is lovely, which means we can take people from out of Cape Town and international students as well, which is really...
You get some of those as well, international students.
Yeah, we do.
I have to ask you this question. Who sponsors you, or do you have to make the
Rodney,
money work?
Rodney, who sponsors us? Anybody listening, please. It's a battle. It's a battle. Look, the thing is that we always say that the Waterfront Theatre School, and it was always... Keats and My Dream, that it's not an exclusive school, it's an inclusive school. Mm-hmm. So we want people to come in by talent, and that is very, very difficult because we often audition people who are utterly brilliant, but they do come from a very impoverished background. And we look at them when we go, you deserve this. You deserve this so much. Mm. We can see what you can do. So, yes, we're constantly seeking sponsorship. Because we can't take everybody on scholarship. We'd close. We'd be lovely if we could. Look, I mean, ideally, it would be wonderful if somebody came forward and said, right, Delia, you can have a school for performing arts and we're going to give it to you and we're going to sponsor it from the Department of Sports, Arts and...
It would be really lovely.
And a billionaire said, right, we're going to give you this building. But as to date, that has not happened. So for all the millions and millions of people listening to this broadcast, which I'm sure there's got to be somebody out there who's going to say, right, Delia, here's about, you know, 20 million and you can build yourself a great big school somewhere.
Right. Because presumably you don't own the building.
No, it belongs to the V&A.
Okay. Mm. But at least it's a good cause if anyone is listening. I mean, what better than to help young students who love music, who love dancing, who love ballet, to be able to support them in their careers?
Well, that's the dream, isn't it? Mm. And that's the dream. And I mean, we do see people through to their conclusion. I mean, we had a very difficult year last year because we actually had a couple of sponsors pull out last year for no reason other than they decided to redirect their money or whatever it was. And I've got students in the middle of their training, so they have to finish their training.
Mm.
And yeah. And if they're in res, they have to stay in the residence. We're not going to cut them off and go, right, well, I'm sorry, you can't pay, you're out of here, because that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And it's difficult, but we're still here. As I said, we're in our 34th year, we're still here.
It's amazing, Delia, amazing. 34 years spotted there. We're going to have another piece of music now. Dansen, Man Foss, the musical, Keith's speciality. Tell me a bit about this.
Well, Keith Galloway, my late husband. Okay, well, what can I say about him? He was an absolute genius. He was a brilliant dancer. He had a style of Gene Kelly.
Oh, really?
Very much, very much. There was no one like him. I mean, he taught me. I used to watch him in awe. And I mean, as I said, he was 20 years older than me. And I used to watch him with absolute awe with his style. And one of the routines that he choreographed, which was just so Keith, and anyone who knows Keith Galloway will remember the style of his work. And Dancing Man from Fosse was one of his speciality routines. And it's the thing I think that Keith will be probably most remembered for.
Be
Dancing Man from Fosse, apparently about Bob Fosse,
yes,
the famous choreographer.
That's right.
When you, Delia Sainsbury is with me here, and you were telling me about your husband, Keith, did you meet him through the dance world?
He was my dance captain at Drury Lane.
And you snatched him away.
I did. I walked into rehearsals, and the male dancers had been rehearsing 2 weeks before the female dancers. It was for a show called The Four Musketeers. And I walked in, and he was rehearsing, and he was doing this brilliant ballet, which with double tours, which anybody who's a dancer will know what I'm talking about. And they had swords, and he was kind of, the sword was swashbuckling above the head and under the feet. And I just looked at this dancer, and I remember saying to a girl next to me, "Who's that?" I said, and she said, "That's Keith Galloway." And I went, "Oh my goodness, I've never seen a dancer like that in my life." And she said, "Stay away from him, Delia. I would advise you to stay away from him." I won't tell you what else she said about him. And of course, for me, there's like this 19-year-old. I went, "Oh, yes, okay."
So you were 19 at the time.
Yeah, and I thought, no, instead of running away, I ran towards.
And now look what happened. And you were married for a long time,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You said he died 16 years ago.
Yeah, 16
which seems
years ago.
Such. It doesn't seem as though he's been gone that long.
I know.
Keith Galloway. Mm. But then your career in this world took off, didn't it? You did all sorts of things. Dancing, ballet, you did everything.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, that's really why I started the Waterfront Theatre School and so did Keith the way we did, because that's the way we were trained in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always very blessed. I could always sing. I always knew if I got through the dance audition, I'd get the job because I could always sing.
Right, right.
I had a nice, strong acting background. Yeah, and I think it was before the term triple threat was really ever coined.
Yes.
But I was probably, yes, one of the first triple threat people. And it served me in very good stead.
And it's interesting as well, remember crossing the Waterloo Bridge with your mother and saying you didn't want to come to South Africa.
Yes.
And yet it's been your life, hasn't it?
It's been the most rewarding life. I can't believe it sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think I've had a very blessed life, and it seems to have been directed for me. I didn't direct it. It's absolutely been directed for me. So if you believe that you've got to be in the right place at the right time, that's the way I feel about my life here.
Goodness me. And that long time you spent at the SABC as well, and many people will know you from that, from being on screen so often. And now at the Waterfront School itself, are you hands-on at all? Do you actually teach?
Yes,
or do
I
you
do.
Leave it to
I
the...
actually teach television presentation.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when people leave the school, do they get a certificate or something, or a qualification?
The qualifications are facilitated by the Waterfront Theatre School. They're not our qualifications.
Oh, right, okay.
They are through the Imperial Society of Teachers of Dancing, London, and through Trinity College, London. And we go up to licentiate level, which in this country can be converted to a level 7. It's a diploma, not a degree. Because a degree is theoretical, whereas a diploma is practical.
Yes.
And this is a practical art form, obviously. So we facilitate those exams, and the qualifications are recognized in over 60 countries.
Gosh, that's
so
good.
So we have people all over the world. And the marvelous thing is, of course, that you can then, hopefully, if you want to go and emigrate somewhere else eventually, you can, because you've got a piece of paper that says you can teach. Even if you don't necessarily go there and teach, you say they know you're never going to be a burden on the state, because they know that you can, you know, survive in another country with an international teaching qualification, which I personally believe in. I mean, I believe in a long-term career, and I think it's important that if you do move away from performing, that you've got other skills, which is why we stress things like choreography, direction, and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we give our students longevity of career, and not just like, oh, wow, I've been in a musical for 5 years or 6 years, and now you've got the younger people coming in, and then what? Exactly.
I know.
Yeah.
And Delia, it sounds to me as though you're still loving it after all these years. Loving it.
Yeah.
It's the passion.
It's my passion. I hope that when I eventually pop off, it's going to be in a tap class going, shuffle, pick up, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, let's not hope that happens just yet. Now, we're coming to the end of the program, and I've wanted to hear something from this musical, Something Rotten, which is playing at the arena here at Artscape as we speak. And what have you chosen? Tell us what we're going to hear.
Oh, you're
and
going
the context.
We're going to play the song, the musical, which is this probably the zaniest one in the entire production. And it's where Nick and Nigel Bottom discover this is what they're going to do with their career, because they cannot outwit Shakespeare.
Okay.
Yeah. I also just want to say something just briefly about the musical, because although it's all froth and crazy and Monty Python, there's an underlying message in this, which is why Paul Griffiths is so brilliant. He brings out a subtlety always of an underlying message. And the message is really, don't try and emulate anyone else. Try and be yourself. Because you're never going to make it if you try to be a clone of someone else out there. Look at what you can do. Look at what your abilities are. And explore your own abilities and your own talent. And stay in your lane. You know, don't look to the right of you or the left of you and see who's going faster or slower than you. Don't look at who's more successful than you. Concentrate on you and what you can do. And it's quite a subtle message, but it's there.
Gosh, Delia, some wise words there from you. Can we end on that and listen to the song It's a Musical from Something Rotten, okay?
Thank you, Rodney.
Delia Sainsbury, it's been a joy to speak to you, and congratulations for 34 years at the Waterfront.
Thank you.
What the hell are musicals?
It appears to be a play where the dialogue stops and the plot is conveyed through song.
Through song?
Yes.
Wait, so an actor is saying his lines, and then out of nowhere, he just starts singing?
Yes.
Well, that is the stupidest thing that I have ever heard. You're doing a play, got something to say, so you sing it? It's absurd. Who on earth is going to sit there while an actor breaks into song? What possible thought could the audience think other than this is horribly wrong?
Remarkably, they won't think that.
Seriously? Why not?
Because it's a musical, a musical. And nothing's as amazing as a musical, with song and dance and sweet romance and happy endings happening by happenstance. Bright lights, stage fights, and a dazzling chorus. You want to be great, then you gotta create a musical.
I don't know. I find it hard to believe people would actually pay to see something like this.
Let's just say it's a Saturday night and you want to go out on the town. Got a lady to flatter who might give it up if you don't let her down. You could go see a tragedy, but that wouldn't be very fun. Or a play from Greek mythology, see a mother have sex with her son.
Ugh.
You could go see a drama with all of that trauma and pain. Or go see something more relaxing and less taxing on the brain. Go see a musical, a musical. A puppy piece releasing all your bluesicles, where crooners croon a catchy tune and limber leggy ladies thrill you till you swoon. Oozahs, big applause and a standing ovation.
The future is bright if you could just write a musical.
Some make you happy, some make you sad. Some are quite big, some quite small. Some are too long, some are just plays the song. Some musicals have no talking at all.
No talking at all?
That's right, there's no talking. All of the dialogue is sung in a very dramatic fashion.
Really?
Yes, really.
There's no talking.
There's no talking. And they often stay on one note for a very long time, so that when they change to a different note, you notice.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.